My name is Rabbi Don Myers. I am chaplain of the Long Beach Police Department in Long Beach, New York. I am also a founder of a Jewish beginner service, also held in Long Beach, New York. At that beginner service, we have adults who literally do not know the difference between an aleph, the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet, and a bays, the second letter. And as the months go on, they know a lot more than that. In attendance of those classes are a number of Bnei Noach as well. And I mention that as an introduction to who I am. Most important is the fact that I consider myself a student of Rabbi Israel Chait. I have been attending his classes for the last 15 years. So much for introduction A. Introduction B, I would like to dedicate the class this evening in a loving memory of my cousin, Dr. Leonard Sakharow, who passed away 30 days ago. Today is the 30th day since. Dr. Sakharow was a loving, giving physician, pediatrician, and he had quite a great deal of interest in people and children, and he isn't around to give anymore. I would like to dedicate, I would like to name the class, give a name to the class on which I wanted to speak tonight as a matter of interest with a capital I. The interest I wish to speak about is the interest that the Torah speaks about. In addition, interest that the rabbis speak about. Essentially, there is a portion in Leviticus chapter 25, verses 35 through 38, in which there is a prohibition to lend with interest. It is commonly assumed that what the Torah forbids is usury, an exorbitant rate of interest, or a rate which is in excess of the permitted law. But that is not the Torah's definition of interest. Interest is any amount of money that the lender is receiving in excess of what he lent out, even if it is within the law. Even if he takes $1,000 from his money market and lends it to someone, and he is now losing the interest he was earning, he can't even get back that interest that he would have earned. That too is interest. And that too is biblically forbidden. The rabbis came along and they instituted prohibitions which, by definition, are rabbinic. Essentially, the difference between biblical interest and rabbinic interest is that biblical interest, the lender takes from the borrower more than he gave. In rabbinic interest, there is an increase, but the creditor is not taking away from the debtor. And I will go on to explain that a little further. Let's start off with a simple example of biblical interest. And let me tell you the text from which I am working. The tractates in the oral tradition which deal with the terra civil law, damages, litigation, personal liabilities, responsibilities, property rights, transactions, are in a section called Nezikin. And there are three tractates which deal with the Torah civil law. And the literal translation of them is the first gate, the middle gate, and the last gate. The middle gate, Bava Metzia, deals primarily with the laws relating to finding of lost items, sales, rentals, deposits, money matters, and interest. In Bava Metzia, the fifth chapter, that chapter deals with both biblical and rabbinic interest. Biblical interest, the most basic case, a person lends an object, lends money for $5 and gets back $6. That's simple interest, and that's biblically forbidden. There are rabbinic interests where what's coming to the lender is not coming out of the borrower's pocket. Let me give some examples, and you will be able to look up these examples at a later date by looking into the Mishnah, the oral tradition, in the Bava Metzia, in the middle gate, in the fifth chapter. Case A. A person is renting out property, a house, let's say, an apartment. This is what is permissible. The renter says, if you pay me now, you may have the item for $10,000 a year. This apartment is yours for $10,000 a year. But if you're going to pay monthly, then the price is $1,000 a month. So that the yearly rental becomes $12,000 a year. Or for early payment, it's $10,000. There are two different rates depending on when payment is being made. That, the Mishnah says, is permissible. There is no interest involved. Let me contrast another case and then talk out the differences. The second case is as follows. A person sells a field. He tells him the following. If you pay me now for the field, or the house, or whatever, the cost is $10,000. But if you pay me for it in 3 months, or 6 months, then the price is $12,000. $10,000 for prompt payment versus $12,000 for a delayed payment. That is prohibited. Now, in both cases, if there's a $10,000 payment at the get start, or $12,000 payment down the line. And in the case of a loan, as a case of renting property, that $10,000 deal offer for early payment is permissible, but In the case of a sale, it is not permissible. What is the difference? It would be very nice if I could get a response out there, but it would be nice if we could spend time on thinking about it, but we don't have time to think about it too much. Let's just talk out the differences. When is rent due? And when is the money on a sale of property due? Rent is really not due the first of the month. I don't mean to offend any of those out there listening who are in the real estate business. They certainly send out invoices the first of the month. And certainly the practice to do that. However, the responsibility of the renter really isn't on the first of the month. The responsibility of the renter really is at the end of the month. Or perhaps at the end of each day of that month. It's an ongoing developmental charge. But you can't say that the renter is obligated from day one for 30 days of rent, not on the first day. So therefore, when the person doing the renting says, if you pay me for a year's rent, today it's $10,000, but if you pay it monthly, it's $12,000. The $10,000 offer for early payment is really a reduction in the rate of what's really due. Because really, the rent is really $12,000 a year. That's really the real price. This apartment brings in $1,000 a month, and that's what it should bring in. So when you're paying $10,000, when that offer is being made, you're really getting a discount for prompt payment. A discount for prompt payment is permissible, and it's not a question of somebody getting paid more, the renter getting paid more if you decide to pay on a monthly basis. Monthly basis, he's getting what he deserves. And he's giving you a discount if you do it a month early. Let's take the case of a sale. When is the money for a sale due? Is the money due in 3 months from now? Or in 6 months from now? Obviously, in the case of a sale, the money is due the day of the sale. And the price that's quoted of, let's say, $10,000 to buy this house, this co-op, this whatever, that's really the price, the market price. And if you elect to pay in 3 months or in 6 months, not $10,000, but $12,000, then you're really paying interest on the $10,000. The additional $2,000 is really interest because the debt was incurred when the sale was made. If the seller gets paid more money for waiting, then he's in violation. Who's in violation? The seller? Yes, but not just the seller. As a matter of fact, there are as many as five categories of people who can be in violation of an interest payment. The one who makes the payment is in violation. The one who receives the payment is in violation. The guarantor on a sale is in violation, and the witnesses are in violation. And if a document was needed to be written and was without that document, the sale wouldn't have gone through. Then even the scribe who wrote up the document, or maybe the lawyer who wrote up the document, would also be responsible. So it covers each participant in what's going on. Let me take a... Let me go on to another case. A person sells a field, and part payment is made. And the seller says, whenever you wish, bring the money and take what's yours. Sound good? Let's say it's a field that produces fruit. What we don't know the day that the partial payment is made is, will the rest of the payment in fact be made? Let's say he put down 10%. Is he going to come up with the rest of the 90%, or is he not? So, of course, time will tell. But what concerns us is the fruit that the field is producing. Who can partake of that fruit while waiting to see if the buyer will in fact come up with the rest of the money? The seller can't benefit from it, because in the event that the buyer acquires the field retroactively, then the seller will have, in fact, taken the produce that he ate while waiting for the final payment as a benefit for his having waited for payment. So he's getting more than he should be getting. When he's getting paid more than he should be getting, we're dealing with interest, and that's not permissible. Now, let's look at the other side of this field which is being sold with a partial payment being made. Can the buyer benefit from produce from the day he makes initial payment until final payment is made? Well, he can't benefit either, because if he doesn't make the final payment and he doesn't acquire the field, if he has eaten fruit all along, then the produce that he ate was in consideration of his having made that partial payment. And he would be getting what he shouldn't be getting. Should they stipulate that the purchaser takes the field when he makes the final payment? Not the way we set it up originally, that initial payment is being made and the field is yours from now when you complete the payment, but instead we're set up a little differently, that he's going to take title to the field at the final payment. Then there's no problem, because the seller can enjoy all the benefits from the field until the final payment is made. And if they stipulate that the purchaser requires a field, that part of the field in proportion to what he paid, then he can benefit from the field based on that extent. And should they agree to the final, that the sale is final at the time of the down payment, and that the balance of the payment is a loan, that would also be okay, because then the purchaser is enjoying the benefit of his field since it's already his. But, and it's a very fine difference, we're setting up a situation where he's making a 10% down payment, and the rest of it, the balance isn't a loan, the balance is the balance of the payment, and if there's no balance of the payment, then the whole deal doesn't go through. Very subtle differences. I would like to divert a little I go on, just to explain the significance of the ideas that I'm talking about. In the tractate Berachot, which is the first tractate in the oral tradition, on page 5a, the Talmud says the following. Rava said, if a man sees that painful suffering is occurring to him, then he should examine his lifestyle. And there's a verse that's quoted in the Talmud to that effect. If he examines it, his lifestyle, and finds nothing objectionable, then he should attribute the negative things that are happening to him in life to the neglect of study of Torah. However, if it's not that, then it's chastisements of love, which is a conversation in all of itself, a different conversation. I just want to focus on step one and step two. We were told that the person should investigate his ways. And if it's not anything that he investigated, then he should attribute these negative things that are happening to him in life to his neglect of Torah study. That is a no-win situation. Let me give you an example. I tell you that in the letters of the alphabet, which I'm making an analogy to the commandments in the Torah, there's a whole list of them, that if there's something wrong with one of those letters, there's a problem. So I tell you to check all the letters. And you check all the letters and you don't find anything wrong, I tell you, well, it's letter C. Really? It's letter C? Why is it letter C? Didn't I check letter C? Of course I checked letter A, and I checked letter B, and I checked C, and I checked all the letters, and I found out that it didn't occur to me there was any one of these things. So the Talmud says that if you can't attribute it to anything, then you should attribute it to the neglect of the study of Torah. But certainly that's one of the things that I checked as well. It's a no-win situation, because whatever the Talmud is going to tell you, you should attribute it to. That's one of the things I checked. I checked my observance of Sabbath, and I checked my observance of Kashrus, and I checked all my observances. And if I found something wrong, so I know what to correct, and if I found nothing wrong, so there's nothing wrong. So how can you tell me I should attribute it to the study of Torah? So this no-win situation was addressed by a Hasidic sage called the Kutzker, who lived about 150 years ago. And he said that what the Talmud is telling you is not that it's letter C. That's not the point, because you can't win that way. Whatever you'll check, but that's, and tell me, whatever you'll tell me it was, but I checked that as well. What the Talmud is telling you is the reason you couldn't find the wrong thing is because you don't know what you're looking for. Your observance of Sabbath. Do you observe the Sabbath? The man has to ask himself. He says, yes. Really? Can you tell me how many basic categories are there in the Sabbath that have to be observed? Oh, there are 39 categories. Very good. Would you mind enumerating them? What are the 39 categories? 39, you want to know? Maybe you can't come up with 39. Well, I can tell you about three or four of them offhand. And how do you know your observance of Sabbath is in accordance with Jewish law? You know why you didn't find what you're doing wrong? Because you don't know what you're looking for. It's your neglect of the study of Torah that is the reason you can't find any one of these things. So now I wanted, with that introduction, I want to share with you a conversation that I had with myself. I spend time of my life in business. And I was once having a conversation with myself, Well, if it's a pleasure when two intelligent people talk to each other. And I ask myself, are you an ethical businessman? And of course, I ran to defend myself, and a resounding yes. I said, very good, terrific. Tell me, how many laws in business can you tell me? Laws in business, let's see, I can tell you a lot about Shabbos, and I can tell you a lot about the laws of meat and milk and Passover. I know some interesting things about Passover. Did you say business? Laws of business, specific Jewish laws? I mean American law? No, not American law, Jewish law. Business, Torah law on business. I'm really not ready to answer that question. I'm not quite prepared. Not prepared. But when you ask yourself, are you an ethical businessman, you right away said yes. On what grounds did you say yes? Certainly not on the grounds that you're familiar with the Torah law on business, and you reviewed those laws and knew what you can do and what you can't do. Well, it was a rude awakening, and it occurred to me that there was a great lack in my own development. And so I dedicated and have dedicated a great deal of time to become aware of these laws. And tonight I picked one particular area, the laws of
India. We need to turn the tape over.
So, we've been speaking about business and the Torah's laws of business. We mentioned one of the two of the Mishnah, the oral tradition on these laws. And it would be appropriate to question of what significance is it, these laws of business? I mean, how important is it really? What does the written Torah say about interest, for example, and what does the Talmud say in general about doing business? In the case of the written Torah, in the Leviticus section, chapter 25, verses 35 through 39, when the Torah gives these laws about not taking biblical interest, the Torah concludes with a verse that I am God your Lord, who brought you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be a God for you. That conclusion of a small chapter of verses doesn't occur in the Torah that often. It isn't as if every time the Torah tells us one of the 613 commandments, the Torah underlines that commandment with, I am God, your Lord, who brought you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan. It's, of the 613 commandments in the Torah, there are only a handful of examples where this not so gentle reminder is given to man. It's given to man in those instances when it is most critical, when it's fundamental. How fundamental is not taking interest? Fundamental enough that the Torah went out of its way to remind each of us of the most obvious, that I am God your Lord who brought you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan to be a God for you. So there's certainly a biblical indication of its significance. In the Talmud, the second tractate, in Shabbos, Sabbath 31a, very interesting Talmud, Rava says that when a man is led in for judgment in the next world, he's asked a series of six questions. He's asked the question, did you deal faithfully in business? Did you fix times for learning Torah? Did you engage in having children? The world has to go on. Did you hope salvation? At least two other examples. That these questions are being asked of the man at a time of judgment certainly indicates that they're important. But what is the very first question that they ask? Question one. Did you deal faithfully with integrity in business? That's the first question. It's interesting. The first question is not, were you faithful to the laws of kashrus? Were you faithful to the laws of Shabbos? The most fundamental question is your business dealings with your fellow man. If the answer to the question is a no, do you get to the second question? Or do you only get to the second question if the answer to the first question was a yes? How significant is these laws? Significant enough that it merited to be the very first question that man is asked. So let me therefore go back to another Mishnah, an isolated Mishnah I choose, and really what I would hope for in this talk is to generate the interest of those who listen to further investigate the Torah's definitions of proper business and proper business ethics. Not just ethics, but essential laws. Again, the Torah's civil laws, all the laws that we... Again, damages and litigations, personal liabilities, responses, property rights, transfers, sales, returning lost items, rentals, deposits, money matters. There are volumes and volumes of civil law, Torah civil law. That Torah civil law has been recorded now, and it's for thousands of years. We have questions and answers that are the Rambam, Maimonides is answering questions on civil law. That's only 850 years ago. Is before him, the questions have been going on forever. Very significant, and it isn't always the gut feeling that the person has. It isn't each person decides... Civil law by his heart telling him what's right. Just as each of us don't determine the laws of kashrus by what our hearts tell us. I know a man who would tell me when it came to ice cream, for which he had a special desire, why I've never met an unkosher ice cream. That's really a riot. Not that he never met a non-kosher ice cream, it's that he loves ice cream. And the love of ice cream supersedes whatever else he should be doing, really. So it isn't your heart that determines it, and it isn't your heart that determines the laws of Shabbos. obviously. Because if it was each of our hearts to determine any one of these laws, then we would have no system. There wouldn't be a Torah system. There would be... each person would have his own set of laws and his own particular standards, and there wouldn't be a system. There's a system because we each subjugate ourselves to a specific system. Similarly, there's a system of law for civil law, monetary matters, and it's not doing what your heart feels, but it is defined, and approximately one-sixth of the oral law deals with civil law. There are six orders to the Mishnah, and the fourth order, Seder Nezikin, deals with civil law. So one-sixth of the Torah is dealing with civil law. Do we know those laws? Well, we should find out, because they're available to us. And that's a different aspect of the laws of interest in this talk that I really wish to label a matter of interest with a capital I. Are other areas which involve interest that's paid before a loan is made and interest that's paid after a loan is made. In chapter 5, Mishnah 10, Rabban Gamliel says there is interest paid in advance and there is interest paid afterward. How is that? If a person decided to borrow from another and he sent him a gift and said, I am doing so, I am giving you this gift in order that you lend me. This is interest paid in advance. Because the loan hasn't happened yet. It's interest paid in advance and it's forbidden. Forbidden biblically or rabbinically? Well, it's forbidden rabbinically because in order for interest to be considered biblical, then there has to be money which is exchanging hands, and the amount of interest has to be determined in advance for biblical interest, but it's rabbinic interest. And rabbinic interest is forbidden just like biblical interest is forbidden. Now the flip side of the example. If this person borrowed from another and he returned the money that he borrowed and then he sent him a little gift and he said, this is because your money was lying idle with me. It was idle. I happen to know that you took money out of your interest-bearing checking account and loaned it to me when I needed it, and I've paid you back what you lent me. I appreciate it very much, and as an expression of my appreciation, I would certainly like to make up the interest that you lost. You can't do that. That's interest and afterwards payment, also forbidden biblically. So you can't pay before, you can't pay after. Now for the real kicker. Rabbi Shimon says, there is interest with words. He, the borrower, may not say to him, quote, be informed that so-and-so has come from such and such a place. Now let me explain you what that means. It would be to the lender's advantage to know that so-and-so is in town. And why am I telling him that so-and-so is in town? Because I feel a little beholden to him, because he was good to me. So the lender is benefiting from the former borrower's words. That, too, is interest. It's interest with words. Some other examples that the Talmud discusses. If a borrower did not usually greet a lender prior to the loan, he may not greet him after the loan. In other words, like this, a certain man I pass every day on the way to work, and, I mean, we see each other, we make contact, I don't really necessarily tell him good morning every time I see him. And then a situation comes up, and I'm looking for some, borrow some money. I say, look, I know this guy. I mean, I sort of know him. We pass each other. So I stop one day, and I say, you know, hi, listen, you know, I need a short-term loan, you know. I'll have you back in 30 days. You'll be fine. And he lends me the money. It's wonderful. I really appreciate it. And I pay him back. And I continue on my daily routine, and I pass this guy every day again. And I give him a big hello because he was good to me. And I appreciate it. That, too, is interest. It's interest to words. That's what it says. Now I'd like to share with you the question that I have, for which I don't have an answer yet, and I would have to spend additional time to try to investigate this question, but what responsibility and what attitude should a borrower have towards a lender? To greet him and to ingratiate himself after the loan was made, that you can't do because it's interest. How is it interest? Because the borrower, the lender is now getting something more than he got before the loan was made. And whenever the lender is getting something more than what he loaned out, that's interest. It's rabbinic interest. It's an idea of creating a fence to remove the person from not violating biblical interest. But it is interest. If that's the case, what is the attitude that the borrower should have? Should he not have a feeling of appreciation at all? Doesn't seem that he shouldn't have any feelings of appreciation. Well, is there a problem with expressing that appreciation in words? It would almost seem that the attitude should be that the lender has an obligation to lend, providing he too has funds available. He's not obligated to sell property to him with dollars to lend it to somebody. But if he has his money available, he can't make a loan. He's not using this money right now for anything in particular. He has an obligation to lend the person. And there's nothing wrong with the borrower asking. And the borrower really is not, owes no particular debt to the lender, because after all, the lender was only doing what the lender's meant to be doing. You know, you did the right thing. I did nothing wrong in asking you. You did the right thing in lending me. And we both done the right thing. And it's very nice. And what I'm supposed to do. You know, every time you do a mitzvah, a positive commandment, I meant to slap you on the back and tell you what a great person you are. You're doing what you're supposed to do. I mean, what is your function in life? Your function in life is to do the right thing. You see, you did the right thing. Of course, I paid you back on time, and I did the right thing. And we each did the right thing. I'm not sure. It requires, on my part, additional investigation. But it is interesting. In practice, I do know that people who get involved with making loans, at least in the Orthodox community, sounds strange, they avoid the words thank you when a loan is repaid. Which sounds strange. So what do they say? You don't say thank you. I mean, some kind of acknowledgement, something. So what they do is, I've seen this done where the borrower will tell the lender when he pays him back the loan, you should merit to do additional mitzvot. A blessing. A blessing is something that perhaps you can do. Then again, you might argue, if he never blessed him before, how can he bless him now? If he didn't greet him before, how can he greet him now? Maybe there is no such difference. I don't have an answer for that. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I have to investigate it further. But maybe we'll take... let me stop at this point. Let's take a little... Let me get some kind of response if somebody wants to say something. So you want to know who I'm talking to? I'm speaking to the person out there holding the phone in their hand.
That's me. I got the phone in my hand. You know, I think, as you said, the last part of yours, it poses an interesting situation, but I think that that you could, since you've had business dealings with people, even if you have regular business dealings with people that you're not buying and selling, the more frequent the business, the more likely you are to greet them every time you see them, whereas before you wouldn't do that. So I don't know how that played myself.
It's a difficult situation.
Yeah.
Because, it's a very subtle point.
Yeah.
There must be a right formula, a right way to express it, where you're really not giving him something more at the same time. And the truth is that, you know, the way I set up the example, that, you know, now I'm going to greet the man when I pass him every morning, and I didn't greet him before. But the truth is, you should have greeted him every morning.
Yeah, well,
you should greet everybody every morning when you see somebody.
Yeah.
So whatever you're giving the person, and whatever good energy that you're giving off as a human being to another human being, that should be given off,
right,
irregardless of anything.
Right.
Another human being out there.
Okay. Miss Lisa Blackburn has a question statement.
Please.
Okay, I have a question about what is the difference in taking interest from a bank, letting them use your money, versus letting a person use money? And you're saying that you can't take interest from them, but you take interest from a bank. I guess I'd like your comments on that.
Okay, that's a very fair question. I didn't discuss a lot on interest, and I certainly couldn't complete it in one conversation. But you can take interest from and pay interest to a company. I can make a loan to a company. Well, that may not be so simple. Maybe I should retract that. It's not so simple because... But okay, let me try it a little differently. Interest, there's a difference between Jews and non-Jews. A Jew may not charge another Jew interest and may not pay another Jew interest. A Jew may charge interest to a non-Jew and pay interest to a non-Jew, both. It's a very interesting law. It's a law that pertains specifically to Jews. So the question that really comes into play, so first of all, to answer your question, generally speaking, banks are really not owned by Jews. So if a person deposits money in the bank and they're getting interest from a non-Jew. Okay, that takes care of that technical problem. The problem comes up in Israel. and or there are a number of Jewish banks. And when you go to Israel and you go into a bank, and they're mostly Jewish banks over there, of course they have Barclays and other banks, but there are plenty of Jewish banks, they have a document posted on the wall. And that document is one which has a whole explanation of how the money that you're depositing in the bank is a form of partnership with the bank. And the bank is using your money to invest and paying you back on your investment. And that is available if the topic interests. There are a number of books out on interest. I'll tell you the name of one of them. It's called Questions of Interest. It's by a rabbi, G-O-R-N-I-S-H. And in that book, of course, the book is in English, and towards the end of the book, he has this document that appears in Israeli banks translated in English. And there are many different versions of it, and it would be interesting to read, and not something that we could get done in this brief talk that we're having. It is put out by a group, the publisher is CIS Publishers in New York, and it's a book, a presentation of the questions and answer, in a question and answer format on the laws of interest. And that's essentially, very briefly, how the interest situation works in Israel and with a Jewish company. A document is drawn up, and the interest, it's you become partners in the bank's investments. Anybody else?
Okay, I think that'll take care of us this evening. We appreciate you sharing your time with us.
I thank you.
All right, thank you very much, and have a good evening. Bye-bye.